Hello, and welcome to episode 37 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panelists include runner-up for both the 2014 Melbourne Regionals and the 2014 Australian Nationals, Liam Prasad.
Hello, how are you doing?
2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
Born for success.
2015 Store Champion and the Best Dressed Man and Netrunner, Hollis Echo.
Only took an hour and a half.
And I'm your host, Brian Holland, 2014 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor. When Jesse and I were in Adelaide this past weekend for Regionals, Jesse made a decision to play Nereith Hub Fast Advance on the morning of the event. As he normally does, he changes one of his deck choices. And after convincing me that I should play something different, he then says, I'm going to play this instead, which is fine. And he decided to play,
play Nereith Hub. He says with not a trace of bitterness.
Yeah, he decided to play Nereith Hub Fast Advance on the basis that most people would be expecting a Butcher Shop Nereith Hub. And if you're playing Biotic, it really lets you get ahead in those early turns when they're not being aggressive against you because they're scared of running. Then it turned out that quite a few lists in the top eight were Nereith Hub decks, most of which were Nereith Hub Fast Advance decks. And we got to talking about this, and what we sort of came to the conclusion was that decks don't get worse. Things just change. People make decisions that change things, and as a result, people have to change what they're playing to respond to that. So it's not like some other card games where you've got this power creep which pushes something out because something else is a stronger thing to do. As Jesse said, when he went to Worlds last year, he played a HB Engineering the Future Fast Advanced deck and a slow Kate Control list, which everyone said was the decks from the year before in 2013, but those decks were still good. It's just people make decisions. So we wanted to talk about the meta and how the meta actually shifts and what the meta actually is.
I think that actually, you couldn't be more right. Often what happens is that like a meta card will come out that basically is a hard counter, and then when that hard counter happens, or when a hard counter is released, everyone kind of goes away from playing a particular archetype because of the fear of that meta card. This happened when Plastri dropped. You saw a lot less Scorched Earth being in the meta. And then a similar thing happened with Clot, where for a brief amount of time, you know, within the tournament season, we saw a lot less in EH. After a while, you know, the meta sort of adjusted, and it after people basically had respected the fear of these meta cards, then people started changing their minds. They said, okay, well, now nobody's playing Plastri. Now nobody's playing Clot because of the fear. This archetype that everyone had kind of been afraid of and had kind of forgotten about based on the fact that these meta cards existed are now back. And because no one's preparing or playing these hate cards anymore, surprise guys, Scorch can still kill you. Traffic Accident is still good.
That's what I was actually saying. I was I flew over with our friend Sam to Adelaide. He was talking about whether or not he should play Clot in his Kate deck, or should he play his second Parasite or something like that. And he said, oh, I really want to have Clot and everything like that. And, you know, it's almost at the point now where you don't have to play Clot because people are expecting you to play Clot. They're expecting you to have Clot. And there might not even be a lot of Nereith Hub there. Turns out I was incorrect. 40% of the top 8 were Nereith Hub. But they'd all made that same meta call as me. It was the other way around.
And I love, like, how that, you know, that concept of what happens to the meta is cyclical. Like, I love that fact. To me, that actually sort of defines how good the game is. When you have this constant rotation of, all right, no one's playing Scorch now. All right, well, now nobody's playing Scorch, so I guess I don't need to run Plastri. All right, so that means my Econ in my deck is better. Oh, wait, but this guy is running high Econ, and now Scorch is back. We haven't been respecting Scorch, so now this is a leader, you know, in another faction. When things like that happen, it just means the game is just so rich, and I really dig the fact that there's all these options for Corps and for runners where they can make a decision to not play some things, and, you know, it completely changed how the meta, you know, how the meta is going to turn out for the next week or the next month. And then everyone has to respect this particular card or archetype again. I love it.
And I think a great example of that, Hollis, is the rise of Econ Denial decks, particularly the Rainer Headlock deck, in response to Corpse becoming slower and playing more high cost in the run ice. It was just, you know, a runner metagame responding to what were the dominant Corpse strategies and finding a way to really hurt them. But then, you know, if you've got Corpse going back to playing 1 and 2 cost ice, the whole game plan of those Headlock Rainer decks becomes impotent.
See, what happens in like the age of the internet and the online global meta is that someone like Spags will decide that he wants to play Wizard, and he'll come up with a Wizard list which then makes it to the front page of Netrunner DB for a week, and then I've got to play on the other side of the world a Regionals where a bunch of people are also playing Wizard, and as a result I'm like, well, I better put Cerebral Static in my deck. And that's how the meta sort of shifts. Like, Cerebral Static isn't necessarily a good card, but in a world where everybody is deciding to play Wizard, the card is absolutely off its head.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of elements to what we're talking about here, and one is that there's a strong metagame in the sense that there are strategies that have some element of the rock, paper, scissors in the format, which is what you want. You don't want to be pure rock, paper, scissors, obviously, where one deck automatically wins, but you want some decks to be stronger against others and some strategies to be stronger against others so that you get variation, because you can obviously only choose one strategy for the entire tournament at a time, which means that you're going to be weaker against the things that some other people have chosen. And there's some element of understanding the metagame and how to play against things that you're weak against, etc., etc. So that's one element to it. And the other element is that there's this sort of groupthink that goes on where people go, everybody's playing RP at the moment, so either I'm going to play RP because it's the best deck, or I'm going to play this other deck dedicated to beating RP, and they ignore this whole other segment of the metagame that has nothing to do with interacting with RP at all, which is where you get these sort of forgotten decks that are still good, but because they don't interact with today's fad deck, they just sort of don't get played.
Well, that's why it was a very interesting time when Nirith Hub and Replicating Perfection were like the top tier decks, and I want to say for a while there, Nirith Hub was more popular than Replicating Perfection. But the people who were taking their runner decks to beat Near Earth Hub because they needed to go fast, they needed to go hard, had problems keeping up with Replicating Perfection. And now I think it's almost tilted the other way, because Near Earth Hub was out for a while due to Clot, and Replicating Perfection, the slower decks, came back. Then you've got the rise of the stealth list, as we've seen in Hollis's list, in Jesse's Kate stealth list, and those decks have a harder time beating RP. Like, that's just what's happening. Liam?
I guess what it comes down to, with the corpse in particular, I like to think that the corpse have maybe two or three, sometimes five or utility slots to work with. So you would put things like your current in the utility slot, or something like a maybe like a blacklist or something like that. And because the corporations tend to have very proactive strategies, just because the game, they usually have the beatdown, they usually have the initiative because of their eyes. They tend to need to choose these utility cards very, very specifically. They've got such a small bank of them, and they are really powerful in the right matchups. Whereas I think it's the other way around for the runner. The runner's breakers are intrinsically responsive. And so compared to, if we were to flip that around and look at the corpse deck, what aligns with the breakers, it's not really the ice so much as the utility cards. And so much of the runner's deck is just, it just comes down to what is utility and what isn't, that we tend to find a runner deck to be tailored towards a particular style of matchup. And this is, you know, runner decks being best against what's the same speed, essentially. And runner decks kind of want to converge to do exactly the same thing that the corpse are doing, but just responsively. So, yeah.
It's not just utility cards, though. It's definitely the ice as well. Like, you want your icebreakers to be matched to their ice.
Oh, sure, but
and
like,
your economy to be matched to their pace of economy.
For example, you know, we got to play Switchblade for a long time because it was so powerful in response to these slow decks, and now you're moving away from Switchblade because people just don't seem to play Sentries anymore. Like, there's a metagame here where Sentries just aren't played that much. And if we had a metagame where barriers were just no good, people would get away with not playing Kuroda. Like, there's no real reason that you need to play a breaker of an icebreaker of a particular type. Just like there's no real reason you need to play additional links in your deck, or there's no real reason you need to be able to remove a bunch of tags or whatever. Like, everything the runner does is very reactive to what the corpse do, so.
With icebreakers, though, I guess I feel a bit differently. Like, I think you are reactive to the corpse ice, and I definitely agree that you want to be able to break the most popular ice in the game, or what you perceive to be the best ice. But I think, in as an overarching principle, you want to be able to break all types of ice as efficiently as you can within your faction.
I think so too.
Well, sure, but we have play decks that can't break certain pieces of ice. Like, we had Andromeda lists for a while that couldn't break Lotus Fields on remotes, and that was fine because the corpse
weren't really
asking
that of us.
We did that for a while, yeah. You know, and that's kind of what I'm saying. The runners need to converge on what the corpse are doing. So to me, it doesn't really make much sense that Wizard has kind of taken off, unless you consider that Wizard, exactly like you were saying, Brian, Wizard's taken off because it's a response to what the corpse are doing. The corpse all look similar from the perspective of Wizard's strategy. So he can converge on this point in the metagame where all the rest of the corp decks look exactly the same, and he's tailored to beat them. Whereas if the corp decks are looking really different, it's really hard to choose a runner.
This is why I was very happy for the Adelaide Regionals to be playing Argus Aggro shell game list. that we talked about quite a few episodes ago, because it didn't really care if your opponent had 3 credits to trash your stuff because you're spamming out up to 8 bad publicity in some games. And it was good because I did play quite a few people who were playing Wizard or some sort of Anarch build that was based along that Wizard list, and a lot of the time it was fairly irrelevant. I think I only dropped 1 Corp game for the entire day.
Yeah, and I think, Liam, what you touched on there in terms of people trying to find a deck that converges on a point where it's optimal against the widest variety of decks that the other side is possible is definitely always the aim. Like, if you have a metagame that's dominated mainly by aggro corp decks, you want to find the best aggro runner deck you can. If you got, as you're saying, a metagame where there's a lot of people playing asset economy, Wizard becomes a lot better option. The thing that a lot of people miss, I think, when they make those calls is that it's never going to be an absolute thing. Like, Wizard might be good against that particular metagame, but what happens if you turn up to the tournament and people have just simply decided that they're going to be playing Operation Economy today and your deck does absolutely nothing? So playing a deck that is purely reacting to what you perceive to be the metagame at the moment, I think, is dangerous, given what we were saying about decks that can be sleepers, that can not be the fad of the day, or cannot be particularly popular, but are still just as good as they've always been.
Yeah, it comes back to the question, like, what makes a deck good? And in my eyes, what makes a deck good isn't to do at all with its intrinsic raw power or anything like that. Those are all proxies for measuring if a deck is good. A deck is good if it wins the event.
Well, I mean, I actually disagree. Like, I think that one of the reasons I chose to play Near Earth Hub on the weekend was that I think it has the two highest raw power decks between it and Replicating Perfection. I think it has the most avenues to victory, and it has the easiest time as a corp actually getting into a winning position. So raw power is extremely important, I think, in determining what deck you're going to play and in determining whether a deck wins.
Yeah, but we measure raw power by saying that most of the time it is going to be the best deck in the room, just because of the way metagames
I measure raw power by saying it's got the easiest path to victory.
Oh, sure, in the sense that it's proactive and maybe, like, quite linear.
But saying you've got the easiest path to victory and being the most powerful deck in the room, it's sort of, you know, interchangeable sentences, surely.
I mean, like, I could just be playing Scorched and everyone in the room has tagged me. In that sense, I would have the best, I would have the easiest path to victory in the entire room.
Yeah, but you're relying on what your opponent's playing in that situation. What I'm saying is when I'm choosing a deck for a tournament, I don't always want to be thinking, what is everyone else going to be playing and how can I take most advantage of that? Because yes, you can get that extra little bit of advantage if you feel like you've got an absolutely perfect read on the room or on the metagame. But if you just play something that is high-powered anyway, regardless of what your opponent is playing, I think you can be in an even better position if the power differential is high enough.
Well, Jesse,
so you're trading off those two things.
Jesse, if you were really worried about Wizard like I was going to that tournament, I know you're not playing marked accounts, but if you really wanted to, you could have changed your pad campaigns out for restructures if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think we're actually, like, saying similar things here. I'm saying that...
I think you are too.
I'm saying the nomenclature is too weak. The only way you can really assess if a deck is good is looking at the stats. And when you look at the stats and something comes to the top, statistically speaking, that we call that deck the most powerful based on the way we play the game. Because that's what we're doing here. All of us, every player, has built a model of the game. And there's no particular reason why anyone else's model is better than the next person's, other than that we win more games. This is what tournaments are for. This is what the game of Netrunner is for. It's all about allocating a winner. And, you know, like, it's perfectly respectable to take a corp deck with no ice and 45 assets or whatever and actually play that. And, like, that kind of thing can win games because it has the ability to win games if the opponent just doesn't interact in the right ways. The vast majority of opponents won't lose to that kind of thing just because of the way runner decks work. They have economy packages like Desperado, or they have interactive abilities like that on Wizard, or they have interactive abilities like that on Imp.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I just...
What I'm saying is, like, saying that the deck has an intrinsic level of raw power relies on the presumption about the way we think about the game, or the way that most players will play the game, in the sense that most core players will play ice and try to score agendas or whatever, or most runners will play breakers. Like, we carry a lot of assumptions into that, but there's no reason the metagame can't move away from that.
Well, there is. The metagame is limited by the card pool, I guess, is the one point I'd make. So within any given card pool, there are limitations on what each side can do and how they can interact with each other. And that's why Astro's Gear Pilot Program is really good, because corporations find it easier to score agenda straight out of hand than they do by leaving them on the table for a turn. given the current card pool. That is a more powerful strategy.
Do you remember that week when everyone was losing their shit because that Exile deck won a store championship and it was all over Netrunner DB and everyone on the internet was like, oh my god, Exile, it's finally coming into power, it's great, it's great. And then that week finished and no one ever heard about it ever again, for as long as we live. And then we talk about perhaps that guy made a meta call by saying, I'm going to play this crazy Exile deck which gets you 5 credits by doing something multiple times a turn or something like that. And he happened to win that, and that's because it was a great call for the meta at that store in whatever part of the world he was from. But you can't look at that list and say, there's a lot of raw power in this list. It's very versatile. It has multiple avenues to victory. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think maybe that's what you guys are getting here, like getting at here with the two different ways of looking at it.
Well, if it won 15 events, we'll have to
concede. Well, but that's what I'm saying. It's saying it didn't win 15 events. It won one event. And Alad David Amir actually pointed out on Twitter. He said, why are we talking about Exile when he won one store championship and meanwhile Andromeda won 15? Why are we talking about that? And I said to him, yeah, like consistency is key when deciding if a deck is good or not. The fact that it won one store championship. And we're not in that same position with Spag's Wizard list because it's winning multiple things around. There was a picture online, I think, of the regionals that was held at the FFG Center, and the top 4 were all Wizard decks. That could just be because everybody wants to play Wizard and everyone's playing Wizard, or it could be because the deck is actually quite good at the moment.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. The notion that the deck is intrinsically good and the notion that the deck is good for the room, they're the same notion, just one's an extension of the other. Like, the notion that the deck is good for the room means it could potentially win one event. Yeah, and winning 15 events just means that the other players haven't reacted to it in time. Now, like, sometimes we overreact to a deck, like, if you know, when Exile came out, everyone, like, literally everyone put 3 blacklists in their deck. That would definitely be an overreaction. But, you know, only 2 or 3 people in the room need to do it. They just need to believe that it's good enough to show up. I mean, it's just like any other market.
Does that not go against your philosophy of dressing to beat the top 8, Shilzy?
Well, I certainly wouldn't do it. I'd let somebody else do it.
Yeah.
And if I get beaten by an Exile deck a bunch of times in the top 8, then eventually I would. But, like, we could definitely envision a different metagame in which Andromeda was never good. If people had just been playing more taxing ice from turn 0 and people had iced up archives more proactively right at the start of the game and never needed to change their behavior to ice up archives, Andromeda never would have been a tier 1 list. There are lots of reasons it could have not been tier 1.
I don't agree. I think that it would have always been tier 1 because of the card pool. But one interesting thing that does come out of what you're saying, I think, is that there are different levels to which the room can react to what you're doing or to which the global metagame can react to what you're doing. And if you think about things like Wayland and Scorched, the way that people can respond to that is by playing Plascrete. And that's why for a long time, it's been a difficult strategy to make work because Plascrete as one card in the runner's deck can really hurt your strategy. Whereas something like Nirith Hub, it takes the runner's strategy completely changing, their whole deck choice being different for them to be able to counter you properly until Clot came out. Now, people suddenly thought you again had a silver bullet one card answer, but it doesn't actually do that. Really, the only way that you can fully shut down NEH or give yourself, I think, a positive win-loss ratio against NEH is by playing Andromeda and playing Econ Denial and Fast Running. So,
because the breakers are the best part, right? The breakers are the best part.
The breakers, the siphon, yeah. The testing, the ability to punish.
Because if you have a clock, you still need important. To be able to break through.
Well, and you need to be able to deny them the resources that they need to
simply
break through to be able to...
Well, yeah, like this is the thing, right? If there was a card that actually... If there was a simple way for the corp to trash a Plascrete, say, for example, Plascrete was a resource instead, people would play Plascrete and Fall Guy together because Fall Guy would replicate the role of ice in that situation. And trashing a resource would be like making a run. And we would kind of converge on this situation where because the corp has the threat in this, because the corp has the reactive threat in this circumstance, reactive to the runners making runs, the runners would need to proactively protect themselves from that, from the Scorched. And this is what corps do all the time. They proactively protect themselves from the runners by using ice. And it's so proactive, it looks reactive. It's kind of just like the old Stacks decks in Magic the Gathering, where people would play cards that were so interactive, they looked non-interactive. And yeah, it's kind of just a mess because it's all these notions are circular and they all kind of build on each other until they stew back down, or they stew down until they gradually build back up again. But this is kind of how metagames develop. If we didn't converge on a metagame around the middle, around like Tollbooth and Eli 1.0 and Account Siphon, and instead people really liked Glacier decks at the start of the game, we could build our decks from the perspective of being as slow as possible rather than as fast as possible.
But there's a reason people converge on those cards. Like, because they're the most powerful, they're the most efficient, and they answer the widest variety of strategies. Tollbooth, Eli, things like that. Account Siphon.
No, actually, listening to both of these, you know, sort of similar and a bit of indifferent opinions, I kind of feel like this is like the basis of the question that you asked, Brian. So, as Liam just said, you know, a lot of this is cyclical, and I think that this is what makes a great metagame, and this is what makes Netrunner so good when, you know, you look at the way a lot of card games work, is you have a particular understanding of what you think makes a deck the best deck. And even if that may be like the primary concept there, you'll get, based on the meta, certain decks that have a different kind of power that in most circumstances it would be either average, maybe even below average, but depending on the existing meta, the deck would be the deck's power level has actually gone up as a result. All of these things, especially when you start to build a deck versus the existing meta, make a really healthy game when you're considering, okay, so everyone's playing Asset Econ. Well, now Wizard becomes far more popular than it could have been or has been in the past 2 years. All right, so then everybody's now playing Operational Econ. But now Wizard is no longer the flavor of the month. Wizard's not going to be played that often anyway. So now everyone's playing this Burst Econ with Restructure Hedge Fund and not playing Asset Econ that generates X amount of credits over X amount of turns during a game. That deck's Econ is actually weaker as a result. And this entire cyclical thing is gorgeous and beautiful. So I guess bringing it back to the initial, you know, topic of conversation, you know, the question that Brian posed is, you know, is this really, really common, and is this a positive, healthy thing for the game when you see decks phasing in and out and decks not really getting worse, they're just getting forgotten about and then they reemerge? I feel like a deck like the Wizard deck is another very obvious example of this, where we were so used to playing the same 4 and 5, maybe 6 runners, you know, as the most popular IDs in the meta. And then, of course, Wizard comes in and with a giant sledgehammer and says, you know, congratulations, I can challenge the meta in a much different way than these other runners could. And there's a different strength here that I've had that really you haven't seen in quite a while, because, you know, the meta wasn't conducive to this ID being so popular or being so useful.
No, I think all these opinions and discussions have been very, very good. I think, like, as you're saying, Hollis, it's correct. Like, Wizard will slip out. And I think it comes back to what Jesse was saying, is that Wizard will slip out because he's not the best card to answer a wide variety of strategies. Like, something like Andromeda is because she's very consistent, or something like Kate is because she's very consistent. And that's the crux of the issue a lot of the time, is Wizard will come in. Also, like, Wizard's not as popular because, you know, there's not a lot of escapism for most Netrunner players in role-playing as Wizard, right? You know, like, that's just something you got to deal with it. Any closing comments, guys?
I think one of the important things to recognize about Wizard as well is that it's a reactive card. It's an identity that requires your opponent to be playing a particular type of deck, whereas something like Andromeda, Kate, Haley, they're all very proactive identities. Even Noise, it doesn't really matter what deck your opponent brings, you've got a game plan and you can execute it. Whereas Wizard loses a lot of power if your opponent's not playing Asset Econ, and I think in the long run, that's why a strategy like that, while it can be more powerful in a narrow sense, lacks the power to be successful against a broader field.
That's kind of another cycle in how players play the game, right? Like, I really feel like we tend to move back and forth between very proactive runners and very reactive runners. So we have these big situations where everyone's playing a reactive runner, and then all the corps lose that impetus there. So we start playing all these really reactive runners that are really well tailored towards the corps, and then the corps start shifting up a lot, the runners lose their power, and then we move back to proactive runners because we really just don't know what the corps are trying to do in that circumstance. So again, we converge to the center. We converge to decks that kind of just go down to the very core fundamentals of the game that we've all agreed upon. And if the corps get the upper hand again, it's because they did something that we couldn't. And this is why I feel like experimentation with corps is such an important thing for developing the game further. If you always just stick to the fundamentals of the game while playing a corporation deck, you'll always be behind because the runners are better at that. And the players are more willing to converge to the fundamentals when they're choosing their runners if they just don't have any idea what the corps are going to do. So like playing a corp and going Mushin Paper Wall or throwing Scorched into your NBN deck or deciding to put snares just randomly in your list somewhere and catch people out. Like, that's a thing that you can do. And corps really need to be experimental and be unexpected and stir away from those fundamentals every now and then just to regain the advantage.
Yeah, I think this discussion has been really good. I think like the main thing we wanted to talk about was the sense that decks will never be bad, because I think so far the design space has been really well utilized and nothing, there is no power creep like we've seen in a lot of other games. I mean, I don't really want to live in the world where Hellion Alpha Test is a tier 1 card for whatever reason, but the way things move and shift is really good for the game, and it's one of the reasons that no one is going to be around for quite a while, I think.
Yeah, I guess just to wrap up a lot of the points I made, I guess like the short way to say it would be that I don't believe decks are either good or bad. I just believe that a deck has a comparative advantage over another deck, and the rest is just playing the odds, be it over a local game or over a larger, wider meta game. So that's just it.
Yeah, and I guess to summarize what I was saying as well, Shielzy, is just that I see it as decks have a particular power either against a narrow field or a broad field, and in my opinion, there are some decks that have just as much or almost as much power against the broad field as those narrowly focused decks do in their narrow part of the field. And a lot of the time, I would much rather choose that broad deck that's either almost as powerful or is as powerful as that narrow deck, but against a wider section of the metagame. And the other part of my point, I guess, is that I believe there are a lot of decks that are broad and are broadly powerful, but get forgotten about in the sort of paper, scissors, rock metagame that people get caught up in playing. And whilst some of these broad decks are also answered by broad strategies on the other side, you can sort of hedge your bets and take a broadly focused corp deck like NEH or HB Fast Advance or Replicating Perfection to a tournament and feel like you've got a reasonably good chance of winning any game. And the metagame can develop into such a, you know, Wizard is good against Replicating Perfection, so people stop playing Replicating Perfection or whatever, such a focused cycle that there are other decks that are just as good that get completely forgotten about, but that are broad.
Hollis, anything you want to say before we wrap up?
I would like to say that, yeah, no, I got nothing. You guys are really, really freaking good. I got nothing.
All right, guys, that's all we've got time for this week in the Winning Agenda. If you want to get in contact with us, you can do so via our Facebook page. We'll start with this time. You can check us out on Facebook. Our like page is The Winning Agenda. You can send us an email. Any questions, topics, feedback you have. If you would like to request any of Hollis Echo's nudes, you can do that there at winningagenda@gmail.com. Thewinningagenda@gmail.com. Or you can hit us up on Twitter.
Like that. It's not a joke, by the way.
Yeah,
Hollis, do you have a Vine?
I should, right? I should have.
You should have. Well, you will good. Now at the end of this episode. Yeah. or you can check us out on Twitter at Winning Agenda. If you like us and you want to support us, you can jump onto Inked Playmats, type The Winning Agenda in the search bar, and hook yourself up with a sweet, sweet Winning Agenda playmat. And if you take a photo of yourself using it at a local tournament, let us know, and we'll throw it up somewhere because we love when people like us. It's good. That's fun. Anyway, guys,
I guess the other thing is our new competition, that if you would like to win a recording of Hollis Echo reading every single card in the game,
yeah,
you can hit us up on our email.
Yeah.
Well, it's a choice prize, right? You get to choose between Hollis reading every card or Wilfie reading the rulebook.
Yeah, that's true. Whichever you prefer. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye bye.
See ya.
See ya. Thanks, guys.